He's a real kid.
Anyway, today we're going to essentially do photosynthesis. We'll finish it up on Thursday, tie the ends together. That's it for the semester. In a week from today, we have the last test, which, Albert, before you ask the question, it's going to be on chapter 5, right, which is cells, organelles, cell cycle, all that stuff. It'll be respiration, which is group test 6, and photosynthesis, which I believe is chapter 6. Okay, this is straight out of the book, everything we've done. I've made all the tests up.
You did?
It has 45 questions in it.
Yes. That's
a good The final will be everything. Okay? I left off, I finished oxidative phosphorylation, did I not? What was the last thing I spoke about? ATP synthesis? Yes. Okay. I just want to add one coda to the respiration story, and it's something I said I'd mention at the outset, and I veered away from, and I alluded to it at times, but it is important. And that is, the catabolic pathways depends upon three energy nutrients. Not all cells have these pathways. In other words, you have to have the genes to make the enzymes of the pathway. But in the living world, there are three principal catabolic pathways that involve glucose or other sugars, okay? And any sugar can be either turned into glucose or 5, 4, and 3 carbon sugars can feed into the glucose degradation pathway. That is glycolysis. Okay? There's a key intermediate in the glycolytic pathway, which is glyceraldehyde. That comes sort of in the middle of the glycolytic pathway at the end of pyruvate. It's going to acetyl-CoA. This is all in your notes. You should not really have to be writing this down. It's a TCA cycle. Okay? The other two principal energy nutrients are amino acids, and I mentioned this, that each energy nutrient does this unique pathway. The beginning of each pathway is unique to the nutrient, but they share common steps. For instance, the amino acids, all of them can be metabolized through a few steps. Some can be turned into pyruvate, others can feed into the TCA cycle, which is the 4, 5, and 6 carbon pieces of the TCA cycle. So you get this pathway which everybody has. But you can also metabolize amino acids to make energy. That's a few enzymatic steps, depending on the amino acid, and bang, you pyruvate, and you already have the enzymes to handle pyruvate. Or a few more steps, and your oxaloacetic acid, and you have all the enzymes to, you know, make that crank the TCA cycle. The final principal energy nutrient is fatty acids. And fatty acids, in just a few steps, I think it's 2 or 3 enzymes, can convert it into acetyl coenzyme A. And again, the bulk of the energy respiration comes from this point on. Okay. You gave me a funny look, if you see it, please. Remember, this is a short chain fatty acid. Look at this. That's acetylcholine. Okay? So fatty acids are metabolized by a pathway called beta oxidation. Beta meaning two. That's a fatty acid. 2,000 pieces are cut off, okay, and turned into acetylcholine. It's a very efficient way to make energy. You're basically one or two steps away from being acetylcholine. Okay. That's it for respiration. We're moving on now to photosynthesis. And all of the living world, the entire biosphere, ultimately gets its energy either directly or indirectly, and gets its organic material directly or indirectly from photosynthesis. Okay? Remember the photo autotrophs. Autotrophs, through self-feeders, plants can make organic molecules out of CO2. And they can take the energy of life and use that to make ATP. And whether you eat plants or you eat other animals or dead animals or the waste products of the animals or the waste products of plants, ultimately, it depends on these processes to get your energy as well as your organic molecules. I talked about the classification of organs of phototrophs, autotrophs. Did I do all that?
No.
Okay, I followed my class. Okay, the living world can be divided up based upon carbon source and energy source. I didn't do this, you sure? For an organism. Anytime you encounter a new organism, two most very fundamental questions you can ask about the organism unto itself are, what are its carbon sources? That is, where does it get its organic carbon to make its molecules from? What's its energy source? How does it make ATP? There are two ways to make energy. One is, we just talked about, is oxidizing organic compounds to yield energy. And you're getting chemical energy. The other way to get energy is to harvest the energy of sunlight. Okay? The word I use is photoautotrophs. It's a combination of the two terms. The photo is where it's giving you energy from light. Autotroph is where you get your carbon. A heterotroph. Troph means feed, hetero means other. You eat other organisms. An autotroph. Troph is eat. Okay, auto means self, a self-feeder. You get your organic compounds from other organisms, you make your own organic compounds. So plants are photoautotrophs. Get the energy from sunlight, they can make their own organic compounds out of CO2. Animals are chemoheterotrophs. Our energy is chemical energy from respiration and fermentation. We get our organic compounds from other organisms. Okay? These are animals, these are plants. The other two possibilities exist. There are things called photoheterotrophs. These are organisms that can make ATP using sunlight, but they cannot make their own organic molecules. Okay, so they need a source of organic molecules. Yes, they don't have to oxidize them to make ATP. These two are all fungi and bacteria. okay? The chemo, autotrophs are organisms able to make CO2 into organic molecules, yet they cannot use energy of life. They still have to oxidize organic molecules in order to make an ATP. Okay? So animals, plants, good question?
About the chemo autotrophs.
An example?
Yeah.
Fungi and bacteria. The first term is where you get the energy, the second syllable is where you get the carbon. The organic carbon. So anyway, that's why I refer to plants as photoautotrophs, and the photoautotrophs ultimately supply all the energy and all the organic carbon to the biosphere. The reactions of the process responsible for this is photosynthesis. Again, photo meaning life, synthesis, making of things. The overall reaction to photosynthesis are six carbon dioxides, combined with stuff, the water. It's not one reaction, as with respiration, there are many reactions with pathways, and this results in the formation
light, right?
That's why it's called photosynthesis. Well, I'll give you a little. HV is the symbol for photons. Clearly, mine always represents the ray of light. Sounds hopeful, doesn't it? A ray of light. The life has both wave and particular properties. The fundamental unit of light is a matter type particle. We talk about neutrons, protons, electrons. The photon is the fundamental particle of life. You are being bombarded with light particles right now. They're traveling at 86,000 miles per second per second. Get beat up by light. And if the energy, if these are literally particles, they're traveling at 90,000 miles per second per second, 186,000, I'm sorry, 186,000 miles per second. They go really fast, okay? Light can travel from the sun to the earth in 6 minutes. That's a distance of 93 million miles. And these are particles. So, we've talked about them before. They're moving with a velocity, so they have energy. And the trick of photosynthesis is to capture this energy, to drive the synthesis of ATP, and to also capture the energy in another form, which is to reduce NADP and NADPH2. Now, you know how electrons carry energy. We talked about that extensively when we talk about respiration. And the way in which ATP is made by photosynthesis is very simply. The energy of this photon, which results in the photon colliding with a molecule, it's a collision, takes an electron of low energy and kicks it up to a higher energy state. You're exciting electrons. And as you know, when electrons go from being low energy to high energy, you can make ATP by stepping down, right? That's what respiration is. And also, that energy is used, those electrons can also be captured as NADPH2. Okay? Right? It's like why that oxidation reduction stuff is so important. It's at the heart of respiration as well as photosynthesis. And the synthesis part, you're reducing CO2 to carbohydrates. Okay? Remember, the coenzyme A, BPH2 is involved in anabolic oxidation reductions. Well, this is where the hydrogens come from. So, the overview is this. Okay, inorganic carbon, low energy electrons of water. The electrons are excited through the machinery, absorbs the energy of a photon. So the excited electrons are used to make ATP, but to live, you also use the ATP to finish the synthesis of carbohydrates. It takes both ATP and NADPH2 to send from carbon dioxide. Any questions? That should be clear at this point, because that's just, in a sense, a restatement of all the ideas I've been talking about for the last 2 weeks. This process occurs within organelles that are called chloroplasts. And the chloroplast is an organelle, is like the mitochondria, derived from an endosymbiont. So the same story applies to mitochondria, to chloroplasts, as to mitochondria in terms of their evolutionary origin. And their structure is also analogous. The chloroplast has an outer membrane, typical phospholipid bilayer membrane. And then it has internal membranes. And the internal membranes are also phospholipid bilayers. These internal membranes are called thylakoid membranes. The thylakoid membranes are stacked into these structures called lana. I don't care about that, but if you see that, that's what it means in the book. They're just collections, these pancake-like stacks of thylakoid membranes. The thylakoid membranes are within an aqueous compartment, which is called stroma, which is like the mitochondrial matrix. The key reactions for the synthesis of ATP and the reduction of NADP occur on the thylakoid membranes, on and across the thylakoid membranes. The reactions for the synthesis of carbohydrate from CO2 occur in the stroma. Again, it's analogous. Electron transport and oxidase occur on and across the inner membranes of the mitochondria. The reactions of the TCA cycle occur in the matrix. It's entirely analogous. Okay? Carbohydrate synthesis, yes, we're making this stuff. A soluble enzyme catalyzed reaction. The making of ATP and NADPH of electrons to come from water, this is something that requires the movement of electrons across membranes. Yes?
Sorry, in photosynthesis,
it's made of ATP. Oh. It's made. Well, I'll answer that right now. Let me just keep going. You know, okay. The reactions of photosynthesis can be broken down into two broad groups of reactions. And these are called the light-dependent reactions, RX reactions, And the other set of reactions, and this is a bit of a misnomer, a misnaming, but it's called stark reactions. Stark reactions only occur when the sun is up. They do not occur at night. Stark reactions are part of photosynthesis. Okay. They call it dark because, and I'll tell you why, the light reactions are the reactions in which the energy of the photons is actually captured. The light reactions result in the production of ATP and the production of NADPH2. So these two things are made during the light reaction. Okay. The dark reactions are the reactions in which carbon dioxide is reduced to carbohydrate. And to do this, the hydrogen is to reduce the carbons come from NADPH2. Okay, so that's where the reducing power comes from. So NADPH2 is consumed during the dark reaction. And also, here's your question, ATP is also consumed during the dark reactions. When the sun goes in, photosynthesis stops. When the sun goes in, no light reactions, no light reactions, no dark reactions. When the sun goes in, plants start respiring. They have mitochondria too. Where do they get their glucose to respire on? They make it during the day. Okay? They make glucose and ATP during the day. At night, they burn the glucose. The light reactions occur on the thylakoid membranes, on and across the thylakoid membranes. The dark reactions are a better name is for light independent or non-light harvesting reactions occur in the stroma, the chloroplast matrix. The ability to capture the energy of a photon depends upon a set of molecules you've seen already in the lab, and these are the photosynthetic pigments. You separated some by thin layer chromatography, and these are the things that give color to plants. Okay? The principal photosynthetic pigment is chlorophyll. And chlorophyll, this picture of it in the book, it's a low molecular weight molecule in biological terms. I don't know the molecular weight, but it's going to be, you know, in the thousands or less range, something like that. It's not a polymer. It is not a macromolecule. Chlorophyll has the most important part of chlorophyll. It's not important, but that the action in the chlorophyll molecule occurs in a fortune molecule called the head portion, which has a magnesium ion held in the center. And what chlorophyll does is this. When a photon strikes the chlorophyll molecule, if that photon has the proper energy, and not all photons work, different photons have different amounts of energy. The different energies of photons are reflected in the wavelength of the light they make. Does everyone follow what I'm saying? This should have been covered in the laboratory. Photons of higher energy have shorter wavelengths and they have violet color in the visible ends of the spectrum. Okay? Photons of lower energy are at the other end of the spectrum and they have, I think it's blue, is the color of the light that you see. Okay? pigment molecules are designed to absorb photons of a particular wavelength, which means a particular energy. When a photon with the proper amount of energy, literally it's a collision, when it bangs into that magnesium in the center of the chlorophyll molecule, the momentum, even think of it that way, again, remember the baseball or volleyball, you hurled at the wall and the wall absorbed that energy? It's analogous. The ball you throw at the wall is the photon. The proton, when it hits the wall of chlorophyll molecule, gives up its energy, and the wall absorbs the energy. And if the ball involved, the wall will shake, okay, if you throw it hard enough. If it's a chlorophyll molecule, that energy of movement is imparted to an electron that's already in the chlorophyll molecule. And what happens is that electron literally becomes excited. So you have a chlorophyll with an electron in it, right? It absorbs the energy of the photon. That electron becomes excited. The asterisk is traditionally used to indicate an excited electron. What does that mean, it becomes excited? Well, the electron literally soaks up that energy that photon gave up. And the actual physical way in which this happens is the electron gets knocked to a shell, an energy shell. Remember them from like week two? Further away from the nucleus. The further away you are from the nucleus, the more energy you have. Okay? And now you have this excited electron. In a chlorophyll molecule by itself, if you take a tube of chlorophyll and shine light on it, okay, then turn the light off, the electrons all become excited, but they don't stay in that excited state very long. They're very unstable. They belong in that lower energy shell, at that lower energy level. And they decay back, right back to that lower energy level. And in the process, the energy of the photon is released now as fluorescence, which is fluorescence is when a molecule absorbs light at one wavelength and emits light at another wavelength. Don't worry about that if you don't understand it. And also they can give off heat. So they give off heat and light energy. So what you have here is a molecule that's able to capture the energy of light. Okay? But by itself, it does nothing. It just captures it and releases it back in a slightly altered form. This is not ATP. This is not NADP reduced. The trick of photosynthesis is to, instead of letting the electron go back to the unexcited state in chlorophyll, the energy is somehow captured. Photosynthesis is the ability to capture this energy to make ATP and ADP. And the way in which this is done is by having the chlorophyll molecule in a very specific context. They are associated with membranes and they are surrounded by a very specific set of proteins and as well as other molecules. And the membrane location allows you to do things with excited electrons. Think about an electron that all of a sudden has high energy. What can you do if you have that electron connected to a membrane, and that membrane has proteins and other molecules that know how to accept energy from electrons? You can do electron transport, make ATP, is what you can do. And it's not a big jump to think that, well, it should be also possible to take that energy of that electron and use it to reduce NADP. I mean, that's where it is. That's what it comes down to. And so it's not just the chlorophyll itself, but it's, remember, location, location, location. It's everything. They're located within very specific complexes in membranes, in those thylakoid membranes, and the chlorophylls are located in these assemblies, the macromolecular assemblies, the chlorophylls, the proteins that are the coenzymes that are called reactive centers. And when a chlorophyll in a reaction center has an excited electron, the electron becomes excited, it goes to a higher energy state. That electron, instead of decaying back to the low energy state in the chlorophyll, is used to reduce something in the membrane. It's used to reduce an electron transport element in the membrane. Does that make sense, everybody? I mean, think about respiration, the very things I was talking about. In respiration, you took high-energy electrons in NADH2 and used them to reduce electron transport components in the membrane, and then you start stepping down in their energy. You capture that energy by pumping protons. Then once you pump protons, you know, it's a hop, a skip, and a jump to synthesizing ATP. The way in which it works is chlorophyll is a small molecule, okay? And again, you need light of the proper wavelength to get photosynthesis, but you also need those particles of light, those photons, to strike the actual chlorophyll molecule. And chlorophyll makes a fairly small part. It's a small molecule. So the chlorophylls are in pairs. Remember, electrons travel in pairs? Each chlorophyll carries one electron that becomes excited. So you have a pair of chlorophylls to become excited. And these are the reaction center chlorophylls. Okay? And these are located in a larger structure that's called the photosystem. And a trick employed by photosynthetic organisms to increase the efficiency of the target size for the chlorophylls is to surround each reaction center can only accept one pair of electrons, which means you can only excite one pair of chlorophylls. Okay? That's a small target. But these things are embedded in a sea of chlorophylls. There's a nice picture in the book. And these sea of chlorophylls are called antenna chlorophylls. So these are reaction center chlorophylls that exist in a pair, surrounded by hundreds of antenna chlorophyll, which are antenna, like antenna on a radio or an old-fashioned television set. And what happens is, say the photon coming in, so if I hit the reaction center, then it hits an antenna chlorophyll. Okay, the chlorophyll electron gets excited, and then that excited electron jumps basically from antenna chlorophyll to antenna chlorophyll until it hits the reaction center.
No, it's too hot over there.
And once, it's not the way to increase the target size. Okay, bigger target, better chances of getting a productive hit. And the energy that photon goes from photon to electron and antenna chlorophyll, and it can literally jump from one antenna to another, and eventually it'll make its way to the center, just randomly. But when it hits that reaction center, that's when the action begins. And the reaction center chlorophyll, the electrons of the reaction center chlorophyll, literally jumps to this excited state. And the trick of the photosystem is to have what is called a primary electron Todd Assessor. And the electron, instead of going back to the ground state, is siphoned off. It goes from the chlorophyll to the primary electron acceptor. Just like respiration. This is like that NADH2 oxidase. In the absence of light, this stuff is oxidized. You shine the light, reaction's chlorophyll gets excited, this electron gets donated to the oxidized form of the acceptor, which becomes reduced. The chlorophyll, in turn, becomes oxidized. It loses the electron. Okay? And then, the electrons go from this higher energy state to a lower energy state. This is through an electron transport chain, which is entirely analogous, not identical, but analogous to the electron transport chain of mitochondria and respiration. And as it travels down the chain, the electrons lose energy, and that energy can be used to either pump protons or, that's one possibility, or the electrons can actually be attached. Can be, it's one or the other, not both. I sort of confused look there. Let's pump protons, if that's what you do with it. You pump protons, then you can make
a good machine. After it goes to the electron transport?
The protons they use to make ATP go down the electron transport chain. The energy that's lost is used to pump protons. Protons are literally pumped into the lumen of the thylakoid membrane. Remember the thylakoid membrane in the chloroplast? This electron transport is occurring on this membrane. The protons are pumped into the lumen of the space within the thylakoids. And then there's a gradient. The phase plus, and the actual ATP synthase in the membrane, and this hydrogen ion, then ions go through the ATP synthase, go from high to low, and that is the step in which ATP is synthesized. Okay? So how is ATP made? In a separate set of events. Primary electron acceptor donates the electron to an electron transport chain, and that chain is able to take NADP plus, yes.
When is it the primary electron acceptor? Why is it?
Yeah, but it's. Say it again. Is that the primary electron acceptor? Say it again. Is that the primary electron acceptor? Yes. The electron. Oh, yes. Remember, NADH oxidase? Yes. It accepts the electron from NADH and it donates from certain next set of electrons. Yes. The same thing. Primary electron acceptor takes the excited electron, which has all this energy, and hands it to another electron transport component. And the electron loses energy, and that energy is lost and used to push the protons across the membrane. Or, the other set of events, and these are two independent sets of events. They occur in two physically separate photosystems. Okay? The other set of events takes NADP plus two protons, and then takes the electrons, they do not go to a terminal or electron acceptor. Well, I guess you could think of this as the terminal electron acceptor, and they make MEDPH2. And so, again, you have these thylakoid membranes. There's the thylakoid. There's the squama. Is that soluble compartment that the thylakoid membranes exist in. It's all within a chloroplast. And the H plus is being pumped. So it's high in here. Okay. The H plus diffuses to the low concentration through the ATP synthase. This makes ATP. Okay? This is one photosystem's work. A physically separate photosystem takes these electrons that are in the membrane itself, being transported in the membrane, and it takes NADP plus, which is in the stroma. H plus is in the stroma, right? Because they're going from the inside to the outside all around the membrane. So it takes the H pluses and those electrons to make NADPH. There are two separate photosystems. This process occurs when a photosystem is called photosystem PS. Albert, you can ask me this in a minute, so I'm going to tell you right now. PS, photosystem 2. And this one occurs in a separate complex of chlorophyll and electron transport components that is called PS1. They both contain a chlorophyll A molecule. Here, chlorophyll A is at their reaction center, so each has its own reaction center. This one, the chlorophyll is called P680, P700, and that just represents the wavelength of light they absorb best. So the chlorophyll, when it's surrounded by the proteins and membrane of photosystem 2, absorbs light strongly when it has a wavelength of 680 nanometers. The same chlorophyll, you put it in the context of photosystem 1, it absorbs light most strongly at 700 nanometers. Yes?
Have, like,
the answer is this. PS2 can exist unto itself, okay? Or PS2 and PS1 coexist. When they coexist, they are related. Okay, it's not as simple as this. Layering on the complexity. So the answer is, in an ideal situation in plants, terrestrial, vascular plants, you have both photosystems which are working in an integrated fashion. Integrated not just in what they make, but this is where it gets kind of interesting. Let me talk about photosystem 2 first. The process of making ATP using the energy of light is called photophosphorylation. Phosphorylation, that meaning again, phosphate, ATP, beats with ATP, photo, the energy to drive becomes the sunlight. There are two types of photophosphorylation. There is cyclic, which is performed by photosystem 2. Now, if you go back to the making of ATP, Remember when you made NADPH2, the electrons ended up on NADP, right? They went from chlorophyll to NADP. But if you recall, that I did not say anything about where the electrons go when you're just making ATP, right? I just kind of left them dangling here at a low energy state. And when you talk about photosystem 2, when it's involved in cyclic photophosphorylation, the electrons actually in their lower energy state, it's cyclic, regenerates itself, are used to reduce the oxidized reaction center chlorophyll. So with cyclic photophosphorylation, involves one photosystem 2, it makes ATP. It does not make carbohydrate. The electrons are just recycled. Okay? When the two systems are integrated,
so it does come back
to it's cyclic, that's what I just because I'm saying, okay? But there's also non-cyclic photophosphorylation. And in this case, the flow of electrons is from photosystem 2. Instead of going back to the reaction center, they have to go to photosystem 1. Then the electrons end up on NADP to make NADPH2. Okay. In the cyclic, it's a nice contained system because you oxidize the chlorophyll, and then that same electron that left the chlorophyll comes back to it. It becomes reduced again. In the non-cyclic, you're missing an electron, right? Every circuit, every time you run through this pathway once, you're losing a pair of electrons, okay? I mean, photosystem 1 loses electrons. Well, that's not a problem. It gets its electrons from photosystem 2. But where does photosystem 2 get its electrons from? And the answer is this. It gets them from water. That's the step at which electrons or hydrogens are physically stripped off of water. It's the step at which oxygen is generated. Okay? And this is a good question. It was a while back. But that's what photoheterotrophs do. A photoheterotrophic bacteria does photophosphorylation, making ATP. So since the electrons go back to the photosystem 2 reaction, they can't make carbohydrates, so they still have to use the organic molecules. Good recognition, you probably have. And the way this works is as follows. Side electron, primary electron acceptor, steps down in energy, and the energy is used to make ATP. The electron goes to photosystem 1 reaction center. Okay? You recall, every time you reduce the NADP, you have to oxidize that chlorophyll in reaction center, photosystem 1. So, nothing works unless the chlorophylls are reduced. In this case, photosystem 1 goes from being oxidized to reduced by accepting this electron after it's lost all its energy. It's still an electron. The electron goes, reduces photosystem 1. Okay, let's get the light in here. Okay. Light, sorry, the electron loses the energy. That energy is used to make ATP. The electron reduces the oxidized chlorophyll of photosystem 1. I hit that photosystem 1. The electron goes to a higher energy state. goes through a primary electron acceptor. And in this case, the electron gives up its energy, and the electron actually ends up with the pair of electrons to make NADPH2. And going back to the beginning at photosystem 2, the oxidized chlorophyll, the photosystem 2, is so miserable being oxidized. It's such a potent oxidizing agent that it literally strips the electrons off of water. At this stage, water hydrolyzed. Think about how stable water is. You can boil water and it gets hot and turns into a gas, but you're not breaking covalent bonds. That's a very stable molecule. And this oxidized chlorophyll is such a potent oxidization, it literally rips the hydrogens off of water, produces molecular oxygen. That's what all of the oxygen in the atmosphere, every last molecule of it, comes from photosystem 2 of plants oxidizing water to oxygen. The electrons are captured by the chlorophyll. And now you've completed the cycle. Okay? Light's absorbed, chlorophyll becomes excited, gives up the electron. Okay? The oxidized chlorophyll literally tears hydrogens off of water to make oxygen and the electron to reoxidize chlorophyll. The excited electron loses its energy in the first step to make ATP, gets excited again, and steps down again to make the NADPH2. And that's the story. Those are the light reactions. There are some details. Let me finish, please, Robert, and then ask the questions at the end. There are a few details in the book talking about class quinones, class cyanin, and they're not important, but this is the essentials of what goes on. This is how the energy is captured by the chlorophylls, how the electrons flow through electron transport chains to make ATP, through the ATP synthase. That's just a plain old gradient, just like in respiration. The other, through the photosystem 1, to reduce the NADP. But again, it should not be intuitively difficult to grasp at this point that high energy, you're taking a low energy electron of water and getting it to a high energy level, like the electron of NADPH2. Okay? And those are the essentials of the light harvesting reactions.
You said that it loses energy.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Let me restate it. Okay, rather than focusing on the detail on the board you don't understand, let me restate the argument, okay? That is, electrons are elevated to a higher energy state, okay? Electrons are transported through electron transport chain to drive ATP synthesis. As they lose energy, protons, that energy is used to pump protons, the pumping protons allows you to synthesize ATP. That's what happens. Everything has to go somewhere. The electron goes to reduce the chlorophylls of photosystem 1. Those electrons of photosystem 1, why is chlorophyll oxidized? Why does it need to be reduced? Because photosystem 1 absorbs light, excites its electrons and gives up its electrons. Chlorophylls give up their electrons. When photosystem 2 gives up the electrons, okay, those electrons flow to photosystem 1. When photosystem 1 gives up its electrons, they flow onto NADPH2. How do you recharge the electrons? Oxidized P680 literally takes electrons out of water. Water is not a limiting nutrient. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Any other questions? Okay, we're doing well. These reactions occur on and across glucose membranes, and then the products, which are ATP and ADPH2, end up in the stroma outside of the thylakoid membranes. And it's in the stroma, this aqueous matrix inside the chloroplast, where the reactions of carbohydrate synthesis occur. They occur through a series of reactions called the Calvin cycle. So, it's a cycle. Sounds reminiscent of something. Calvin cycle consumes ATP and producing power of ATPH2. The other substrate that feeds into the Calvin cycle is carbon dioxide. Carbon enters the cycle as carbon dioxide. It comes out of the cycle as carbohydrate. It enters as inorganic carbon. It exits as organic carbon. It's a synthetic reaction. They require energy, okay? And they require hydrogens to reduce, to make the organic, inorganic to organic. ATP supplies the energy, and pH provides the hydrogens. The Calvin cycle regenerates itself, and this is the essence of the dark reactions. Again, it occurs in the stroma of the chloroplast. It only happens when the light reactions are going on, because two of the three substrates for these reactions come from the light reactions. No ADPH2, no ATP, and no light reactions. Now, at the beginning, I mentioned the glycolytic pathway. I mentioned a key three carbon intermediate of the glycolytic pathway. That was there aldehyde? Three. A carbohydrate that literally comes off the Calvin cycle is, this is a C3 compound, is glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate. Calvin cycle does make glucose. It makes an intermediate in the glucose. Go back to chapter 6. Go look at chapter 6. Go look at the various steps of glycolysis. There in the middle, you'll see three carbon intermediate, glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate. Plants make glucose by literally pushing the reactions of glycolysis in the reverse direction. It feeds in three carbon pieces, there's glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate, and two glyceraldehyde 3-phosphates are used to make one glucose. The process is called carbon dioxide fixation. It's not floating, it's fixing in the sense of affixing. You are affixing hydrogens to inorganic carbon. And so carbon dioxide fixation is carbohydrate synthesis making CO2 a carbohydrate. The anybody have any questions on that? I'm going to redo this again with more detail. If you don't understand this, you might as well go to sleep now for what I'm about to say, because it gets more complex. And if I have a question, boys, you want to stay awake? Can you grab what I'm saying here? The first enzyme, remember the first step of the TCA cycle was taking acetylcoenzyme A and attaching it to oxaloacetic acid to make citric acid? Well, there's a key first step in which CO2 is one carbon piece enters the Calvin cycle. It's catalyzed by an enzyme called Rubisco. It's an acronym, which stands for ribulose biphosphate. You can look it up in the book. Don't waste your time trying to write it down. Rubisco is good enough. I'll never say this word again. Ribulose biphosphate, which is a substrate, which is a C5 compound, carboxylase. Okay? So it's the adding of carboxylases, either add or detach CO2s from substrates. In this case, you're adding. This carboxylase adds the C1 molecule, which is CO2, to the 5 carbon, which is ribulose biphosphate. And Rubisco is the most abundant enzyme on the planet. Seeing as the plant depends upon photosynthesis for all of the organic material, it makes sense that you have a lot of this stuff in the world. It's a massive enzyme